and KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles, KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo, a service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.
Hey, I'm Carmel Holt, and welcome to She Rose Radio, a space that was created to turn up the volume of women's voices and gender-expansive folks in song and conversation. We're here not only to amplify, but multiply those voices that you may not even be aware you're missing, but are still not heard in equal numbers on the airwaves and in music. So we get together each week for an hour of songs and interviews featuring the trailblazers and the new visionaries across genres, generations, and identities, hosted, produced, and powered by women and queer folks. To quote Gloria Steinem, revolutions come from combining what exists into what has never existed before. This radio revolution starts now.
when they're asking you to change things, but with their suspect lives, we look the other way. Are you really that pure, sir?
Can I do but move on? I've got to move on.
Rest in power, Anita Pointer, who was the lead vocalist on all three of the Pointer Sisters' top 40 hits in their early years. Sad to learn of her passing on New Year's Eve at age 74 from cancer, now joining her sisters Bonnie and June in the great gig in the sky. And that song was a huge outlier by the Pointer Sisters, written by Anita and Bonnie, called Fairy Tale, a country song that won them their first Grammy and was their second hit. And a bit of country music history here. On October of 1974, the Pointer Sisters performed Fairy Tale at the Grand Ole Opry, marking the very first Opry appearance by an African-American vocal group. Also wishing Jenny Lewis a very happy birthday, Sunday, January 8th. And with that, I welcome you, my friends, to the very first She Rose Radio of 2023. Happy New Year. It's great to see you as always, as we turn up the volume of women's voices in song and conversation for the next hour. I'm your host, Carmel Holt. And stay with me for this week's Shiro interview with Wise Blood. And now a couple more Shiro birthdays to celebrate. Clara Soderbergh of First Aid Kit shares a birthday with Jenny Lewis and turns 30 this year. From the new album Palomino, here's Out of My Head.
Back in time, oh, I go wandering through the rooms of my mind. Every door been closing, all the people that I have let down on a river. I'm floating down the street and back again like a beggar on my knees. Am I running out of time? Look inside my dream and find me high. Running on low, doesn't matter. Yeah.
Years between those two artists, both with birthdays this week. The legendary Pat Benatar turned 70 on Tuesday, January 10th, and Clara Soderbergh of First Aid Kit is 30 on the 8th. I'm Carmel Holt, and next up, it's a not-to-miss Shiro's interview with Wise Blood. Stay with me.
For the price of one coffee a week to wake you up, you could subscribe to the SoCal Sound and awaken everyone to exciting public radio. Subscribe today at thesocalsound.org.
A college education helps open doors of opportunity. And whether you're the first in your family to go to college or you're continuing a family tradition, you'll find the support you need at California State University Northridge. A CSUN education will give you the skills and experience needed to pursue your passion. Plus, it's affordable. More than 80% of CSUN students receive financial aid. It's not too late to apply for fall 2023. Visit csun.edu to learn more and apply by January 31st.
You never know what you'll hear next. 88.5, the SoCal Sound.
You're listening to Shiro's Radio, and I'm Carmel Holt. We kick off 2023 with a critically acclaimed artist whose new album arrived just 6 weeks before the end of the year, but still managed to make it onto nearly every year-end best-of list, including my own, Natalie Meering's fifth album as Wise Blood. And In the Darkness, Hearts Aglow is the second in a trilogy, which she began in 2019 with the universally acclaimed Titanic Rising. A multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, and producer with a voice that often draws comparisons to Karen Carpenter and songs that sound right at home next to Harry Nilsson's, Natalie was born in Southern California and grew up singing in choirs before picking up the guitar at age 8. After a few moves, her family settled in the Philadelphia area, and Natalie's musical interest veered to noise rock and experimental music. Starting out in the underground music scene in the mid-2000s, Natalie released her first album as Wise Blood, The Outside Room, in 2011. Each album progressively evolved sonically into what it is today, but as you're about to hear, Natalie Meering's dual nature and exploration of light and darkness, creation and destruction, clarity and dissonance, and yes, feminine and masculine, is always present in constant conversation with itself, and is what makes her brilliant creativity all at once modern and nostalgic. I'm thrilled to welcome Wise Blood as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Natalie Meering, a.k.a. Wise Blood, welcome to Shiro's Radio. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And In the Darkness, Hearts Aglow is your fifth studio album. It was definitely one of my favorites of 2022, and I know so many agree. How's it been feeling to see it land on so many year-end best of lists?
I'm really grateful because it came out so late in the year. It's cool that people still considered it.
You wrote this open letter with the release of the new album for fans, and you said, "I was asking a lot of questions while writing these songs." And I wanted to ask if you would dive into that a little bit deeper. What questions were you asking yourself?
I think I was just trying to get down to the root cause of everybody's disillusionment. Like, how could we be living in the most convenient time in terms of access to things, and how that still creates this existential sickness in a lot of people, and how a lot of people are very unfulfilled with their work and generally isolated. There's just a disintegration of the social fabric that feels like it's been happening slowly for so long that it's hard to really gauge the sources that are causing all these irrevocable changes. So I think it takes a little bit of a nuanced conversation and going deeper, subterranean style, into yourself and checking out your relationship with intimacy and the rest of the world and recent events and abstract information, especially with the climate crisis and the economy and the war and like all these things that we have so much information on. But in terms of what are the actionable things to do, I think people get a little confused. And so that's kind of the pathway of my questions, is like, what is the root cause? What can we actually do? And how can we field all these chaotic energies on a daily basis?
Can I ask what tools you used to find the answers to those questions?
I guess my brain. I'm just writing.
But were there any like external sources that you turned to? Were there books that you read? Was there a practice or practices that you turned to find some answers?
I guess that's very personal. I mean, yeah, I read a lot of books. I especially loved this book, Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Tyson. And I really love this book, The Culture of Narcissism by Charles Losh, and The Unsettling of America by Wendell Berry. And those books, I think, showed a little bit about how in a society that does not respect cycles at all, there's no cycles of death and rebirth with anything that happens culturally now, because everything is perfectly preserved archivally on the internet forever. You can see that that's a problem. So yeah, I think that meditation and reading and going inward and maybe just not buying into everything so much.
So interesting. Every pandemic record takes a different tone, a different shape. There are some commonalities. I think vulnerability was a big theme. And your album is so vulnerable. I mean, I think almost encouraging us to be more vulnerable. Does that resonate with you? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, definitely. I think vulnerability is important. I think that it's easy to try to sculpt a persona about who you are, and you don't necessarily have to be that person behind the scenes, because the disconnect between our avatar, social media self, and our real self is pretty wide. So I think more people actually front than ever before. So I think it's important to drop the front.
I've read somewhere that, speaking of fronts, that you felt like in the beginning of your career, in fact, I have this quote here, you used to mute your sexuality and your femininity so you could be considered a peer and a bro. And I was hoping you could speak to us a little bit about that journey for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just being a teenager and interpreting feminism in that way. And feminine qualities I misinterpreted as weakness. Like, if you came to the show in high heels, you're going to look stupid because you couldn't, you know, run around and mosh. Or, you know, you couldn't wear clothes that were pointless. Everything had to be very utilitarian, and you had to be at the same level as the men to be taken seriously. So it was an interesting skill set, because it did, you know, at the time really work. But in hindsight, I'm like, oh yeah, that the high heels and the skirt are not weakness. That's just something else. You know, there was something that kind of emerged post that kind of black and white extremism of, if I'm going to be taken seriously, I have to be very masculine. I think now we're kind of blessed to be in a time where that's not as much the case, and femininity is celebrated as being very strong. But yeah, at the time, I just wanted to be in the hierarchy with men and show that they didn't need to defer to one another, that they could also defer to me.
And have you found that as your career has gotten more and more successful,
that it's become easier for you to have a voice in the room, whether that be in the studio or in a live setting?
Yeah, I think that more and more I feel, like I've proven myself in a way where I haven't actually had to deal with that energy in a really long time. But yeah, I think any woman, no matter how powerful, if you get in a studio full of men, they will naturally defer to one another. Kind of subconsciously, the dominance hierarchy exists with them in a way that's very natural and not actually very personal. So it's like, if you exhibit any signs of confusion, inevitably somebody's going to sweep in there and be like, well, I think I know what you should do, you know, and it's only natural and it's not personal. And as long as you know that, you can kind of navigate around it and not feel so silenced.
That is such a smart piece of advice. So many women struggle in those situations and we go into reaction mode there.
Well, I do think if men tend to be more subconsciously prone to a dominance hierarchy, then yeah, any signs of fear or uncertainty for them is like, oh, we've got to put you down at the bottom because somebody confident has to be up here to like call the shots, you know? And that's not coming from this place of like, oh, you're a woman, you don't know what you want. It's just more subconscious. So when you don't get mad at the situation, you just kind of learn how to occupy it with your own strength. I think everybody is actually very open to a female leader.
That's so good to hear. Natalie Meering is here with us. Wise Blood, the new album is And in the Darkness, Hearts Aglow. As we've been talking about all of these topics, I keep thinking about God Turned Me Into a Flower. And I'd love to play a little clip of that here. And I know that this was also one of the first songs that you wrote for this record. Is that right?
Yeah.
Can you talk to us a little bit about this song and how that fit in with your journey of making this album? Did you know that you were making an album when you wrote it?
Yeah. And I mean, I was really influenced by the myth of Narcissus because I had always interpreted it that he was so vain that he became obsessed with his reflection. And narcissism was really this vain self-obsession. But ultimately, the real crux of the myth is that he becomes obsessed with the reflection, but doesn't realize that it's himself. And he eventually kind of withers away in that obsession. God turns him into a flower at the end. Being soft and pliable is actually how to live, and being rigid and structured in a way is equal to death. A lot of people kind of need that takeaway. I think we've become very rigid and we've become pretty obsessed with the concept of like a frontier or an otherness or like a better version of ourselves or a better version of technology. And we lose sight that as we continuously try to conquer nature, we're missing the whole point that we are nature, that the reflection and wherever we're trying to go is really already within ourselves. So that just seemed really prescient, and finding a way to put it in a song that's kind of hymnal and really minimal while still being a journey to listen to was fun, because at first I was like, oh, this is just three chord changes and a couple words, but we had a lot of fun in the studio making it a little bit more than that.
As long as I stand to face the crowd, to know my name, to know sound. It's good to be soft when they push you down. Oh God, turn me into a flower.
God Turned Me Into a Flower. It falls in the middle of the new album by Wise Blood, And in the Darkness, Hearts Aglow. Natalie Meering is here with us on She Rose Radio. I'm Carmel Holt. It's a song that mentions God. I know that you grew up in a somewhat religious household. How often have you included God in your songwriting?
This might be the first time, but so many people are doing it now. It's really popular. God is super back in vogue.
God's back.
Yeah, no, everybody has some song with God in it or some t-shirt that says God. I think some people kind of found it a little ironic, and then all of a sudden it was also meaningful.
What did it mean for you?
I think it just is kind of referencing a higher power and a force beyond yourself, and also something you ask. You know, if we can't really comprehend the greater energies that impact us on a subconscious level that we can't really see asking. And the concept of prayer is actually still really relevant, even if you're not a Christian.
You seem like such a keen observer of the human condition and spirituality and so tuned in that way. Can you pinpoint a time where that curiosity and that sensitivity may have really kicked into gear, or have you always been that way?
I think I've always been that way. I've always been very, very aware of what other people are feeling and very aware of what I'm feeling. And it's always been on 11, like just full blast, even when I was a little kid, no matter what, everything was extreme. So I like to say I have like extra emotional software. My Adobe suite of emotions is plentiful.
I wanted to also talk about your musical background. You started off, I think, on the piano before you got a guitar, right?
Yeah, I was playing piano and minimally playing guitar and singing a lot.
When did songwriting start to come into the picture for you?
Well, I wrote my first song when I was 4 because my mom was writing songs and I was kind of trying to be like, I can do that too. So I wrote a really silly song that I used to like ride around on my little tricycle around the island in the kitchen over and over again, singing it, probably driving everybody crazy.
Do you remember what it was?
I think it was like, don't go away. Please don't go. Don't go away. Something like that. I don't know.
It's a bop. I love it.
It was a total bop. It was, you know, early 90s bop. But I started writing more like the songs that become the songs of now when I was like 12 or 13, when I got really into the guitar and I was writing a lot of like finger style and kind of folkier instrumental, just weird chord changes songs. And I was really into post rock and stuff like that. And then I think it was around 16 or 17 that it was like, I started writing a lot more lyrics.
Your lyrics are incredible. And also just to listen to you talk is just so beautiful. It's like poetry. I was going to ask you if you've ever thought of writing prose or poetry.
I have written poetry. I did my first poetry reading this year, which was really exciting to read poems that weren't attached to music. And yeah, I'd love to write books. And I have little things I've started and stopped. I mean, writing a book really is a confidence thing. But I think for a long time, I was like, oh, I'm not, you know, learned enough, or I'm not intellectual enough. But I feel lucky that people have kind of pushed me based on just my songwriting and talking. They're like, yeah, you could probably write. And I look forward to writing my first book, whatever it may be, if it's autobiographical or just abstract.
I think about Hearts Aglow, and you were talking about how it's like a glow stick when you crack it open.
Yeah.
It only glows more. And I was wondering, being an empath, is that something that ever feels overwhelming with your fans?
Every once in a while, if I'm out and somebody will come up to me and tell me like, hey, your music really helped me through this time, I'll get emotional and like tear up a little bit because I'm just still in a state of shock that I completed the mission, you know, of taking my pain and my experiences and distilling it into something more universal. And I think that a lot of people suffer from a real marked lack of feeling known and understood.
I wonder if it makes sense to go to the thesis of the album, It's Not Just Me, It's Everybody Here.
Definitely. I think this one was kind of a sleeper hit. And when I wrote it, we weren't even sure if it was going to make it on the record. But when we recorded it, I was like, you know, this makes so much sense. It's so simple. It's almost stupid, but it's just universally true. And it's something that people need to hear all the time. Not even in I'm not the only one that might feel this way, but also just this idea that capitalism makes us so cellular and we think we're so independent of everything else. But I think we're all pretty interconnected, especially with nature and the animals around us, that, you know, even on the climate crisis kind of scope, it's not just me, it's everybody, is also about everything that's impacted by our behavior. So yeah, I guess it's a little bit of a Buddhist anthem.
Sitting at this party, wondering if anyone sees who I am. Oh, it's been so long since I felt really known. Fragile in the morning, can't hold on to much of it.
It's not just me, it's everybody that kicks off the incredible new album by Wise Blood. Natalie Mehring here with us on She Rose Radio and In the Darkness, Hearts Aglow. Another story that came to me when I was listening to this record was Dante's Inferno, that journey of going into the darkness. Did you think about that at all as far as like kind of an overall spiritual journey that this album or maybe even Titanic Rising, this one and the one that's coming after might be telling us?
Yeah, I felt like this was the Dark Night of Soul one. Titanic Rising was an observation of things to come. And then this one is living amidst the blare of the alarm going off permanently all the time now. Going internal is our only choice. And that journey is pretty treacherous. And yeah, like this concept that we all generate our own guidance in terms of light and being aglow and being something that can function within that darkness just fine, just from generating your own light. Because I do think that the way we're all structured to think is that we need something external or outside of ourselves to function or be better or attain whatever goal we want. But I think it's more about what's happening inside and in between the eyes. And that is still a journey I learn every day. It's still a very difficult choice to occupy that responsibility, you know?
Yeah. And especially when you're doing a job like you're doing too, because the music business, the industry, it's so not that. And so not centering us and so not centering well-being overall. Somebody just said to me the other day, like, oh my God, like if a tour bus has tampons in it, I feel so seen.
Yeah, right.
So kind of wanted to toss that big ball over to you, Natalie, and ask you about what you think about doing this job as a woman and what's needed. What kind of shifts do you think we need to make in the music business to make it better for us?
Well, I think it's a bigger question. I think capitalism might have kind of perverted feminism in a way where the idea that we should do it all, like have the career, have the family, have everything. I think it puts too much pressure on women to be everything. And especially in the way that it's all structured, it's not actually catering to anybody's sensitivity, even men. It's kind of a ruthless system. It's even bad for guys, you know, but they're just better at shrugging it off or not dealing with it until it's too late or something. But women, I think, because we're just more aware generally maybe of our bodies, sometimes women have a tendency to be more adamant about what is actually humanly healthy and possible versus grinning and bearing it and getting as far as you can for capitalistic gains. So I think it's a greater societal thing. And music is just like a part of that. I don't think that there's anything you can really change about music to make it more female friendly than it already is, because I think it's predominantly female now. And I think that it's been such a big motivation for people to balance that out, that more than ever before, if you're a woman starting in music, you have a better chance of doing things. And I would say if you're like a white guy starting music, you have less opportunities than you've ever had before. So I don't think that anything needs to be done for the women. I think the door is open and they already have the keys. But the problem is that culturally and societally, capitalism itself is inherently unhealthy for most people. So I guess that would be unhealthy for women too.
Right. I can hear that. I don't think that we're totally rid of sexism yet.
In music?
In music and in general in society.
Yeah, I think I'm talking predominantly about music. I don't think sexism is done in society, but I just see from when I started to play music and now, it's a huge, huge change. But there's always room for more. I just feel like because I'm more old school, I'm like, wow, it's pretty great now. You know.
Well, it's like funny because that is true. And I talk to women of all ages. Like, I mean, I think my oldest guest was maybe 83 and my youngest guest was in their teens. And so
It's been really interesting to like hear from generation to generation, decade to decade, like what everybody's impressions are.
I think if you're young too, like you're more idealistic. So you can come in with a more fresh perspective of like, oh, there's still more things that need to be done versus somebody like me who's like, whoa, look at all that's happened. You know, like it's always going to be somebody younger coming in and be like, well, no, we can go a little further with this. But for me, I just see it as it's such a dramatic shift that I'm still pretty in awe of it. But I think the whole idea of like a curmudgeon sound guy or like the venue people ignoring you, I always got a really big kick out of it because there's nothing better than exceeding anybody's expectations. So they show up, they don't talk to me, they don't pay attention to me. And then I play a kick-ass show and then they like, oh, that was the one to talk to. And that was the one that ran the show. And I'd much rather make somebody like that look stupid than come in right off the bat real hot and be like, look, look at me, talk to me. I'm the one, you know. I've always been quiet strength where it's so much more fun to prove somebody wrong later naturally versus show up and immediately make some kind of stink about what's going on. Because I think a lot of those men are failed musicians. I think they would be rude to a lot of people. I've seen them be rude to men too, but it's just hard as a woman. You're just so used to being dismissed that in that context, it feels pretty strong. But I would say that most sound people and venue people are generally cold and whack and not, you know, the friendliest. And I think that's because they're hurting that they never got to do what they really wanted to do. So
Natalie Maring here with us on She Rose Radio. I think you said that feminism, it's become capitalist.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that a little bit for us? And also, I'm curious to know, would you identify yourself as a feminist?
Yeah, I identify as a feminist. I think when I say it's become capitalistic, it's become too focused on being, you know, like a lady boss, like this idea that being empowered as a female means that you have to have it all, like the career, the money, the independence and all that. And I think that that is cool for some women, but it's not for all women. For me, feminism would fail its mission if it excluded women that wanted to just be mothers or wanted to be something else, that didn't want to do all of that. And I think that there's a little bit of a divide and kind of a misconception that feminism is like so specifically that, like the Gloria Steinem, like 70s, we're empowered, we get to go to work. And that makes sense for that time. But I would say that I feel the pendulum swinging another direction now where I feel like it would be more appropriate if we just accepted all the different varieties, including trans women, which I think like a lot of classic feminists are a bit exclusionary about that as well, but to include women who might be a little bit more kind of traditional in their values, and that is actually a very strong feminine choice as well. And in the 1950s and 60s, it was pretty important to dismantle how oppressive that was. But I think now we're in a different headspace. And yeah, I wouldn't think feminism is what I thought as a teenager, like pretending to be a man to get somewhere. So I would hope that younger women feel more comfortable expressing femininity and not having to suit it up and be really tough. And I think that that unfortunately became a stereotype of the radical feminism in the 60s and 70s because it kind of had to be that way. But I think it's a journey, you know, and I would hope that the pendulum kind of swings back towards like, you know, maybe making all the money and having all the babies and being the boss is not for everybody. It's okay if you would prefer something else. I just find that it's not so black and white. And I think that it involves all different kinds of expressions of femininity.
For you personally, what is your definition of being a feminist and doing Wise Blood in the future look like?
I think it looks like just continuing my songwriting narrative journey. And I think that I express a good balance of that kind of femininity. I don't know. It's not really something I can call. It's not really my choice how people are going to interpret what I do and what they're going to do with it. It's not like I have that much control. So I can only do what I do, which is put out records and sing and write about this stuff.
It's been so great to spend some time with you. Thank you so much for being here. I want to take us out with another song off this record.
Let's play The Worst Is Done.
It's been a long, strange year. Everyone said they lost what they thought they had. We lost our voices.
With thanks once again to Wise Blood. Natalie Maring, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a different
Many thanks once again to Natalie Mehring for being with us. The new Wise Blood album, And in the Darkness, Hearts Aglow, is available now on Sub Pop Records, and her U.S. tour begins in February. Next, we close the hour celebrating another Shiro birthday and introduce you to our next Shiro's in the Spotlight when Shiro's Radio continues.
Hi, this is Nick Harcourt, inviting you to join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 a.m. for the Nick Harcourt Show with Jet, along with features like our Latin Alternative Track of the Day, Nick's Pick, our Fresh Squeeze Track of the Day, and ticket giveaways. We deliver the best music mix in town. Please, get out of bed and into your day with us Monday through Friday at 88.5 The SoCal Sound.
It's Shiro's Radio, and I'm Carmel Holt, introducing you perhaps to the self-described female-led discodelic soul band, Say Shishi, who will be our featured guest on the next episode of Shiro's Radio, is a track called Trouble.
Oh, no.
Happy birthday to the one and only Mary J. Blige. Her birthday is on Wednesday, January 11th, and her classic hit, Real Love. Plus, it was Say She She and Trouble. They will be our guests on an upcoming episode of She Rose Radio. And that does it for this week's show. Thanks to you for tuning in wherever you may be listening. Together, let's keep turning up the volume. She Rose Radio is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. We get production assistance from Emma Philippos. Our original theme music is by Lucius. For more on She Rose Radio, please visit SheRoseRadio.com. You can support the show with Patreon or check out the She Rose shop. She Rose is also a podcast. You can listen to our interviews on the Talkhouse Podcast Network, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at She Rose Radio. And until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks so much for listening.
88.5 FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo. A service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.
Everybody got problems, nobody knows why. Life is full of trouble, go on and do your best. Take one day at a time.